Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Deborah Harkness is a scholar and writer specializing in the history of science and medicine. She's received numerous awards, including Fulbright, Guggenheim, and National Humanities Center fellowships. Currently a professor of history at the University of Southern California, she is the author of the New York Times bestselling All Souls trilogy, and the final book in that trilogy, The Book of Life, is out today. The first two books in the All Souls trilogy have sold over a million copies, with 2012's Shadow of Night hitting number one on the Times list. Critics and readers have praised Harkness's elegant writing, complex themes, and brainy heroes. She'll be at her alma mater, Mount Holyoke, tomorrow night to celebrate the publication of the new book. It is a great pleasure to welcome Deborah Harkness back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's great to be back.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back. You know, last night I had finished the book, and I was getting ready for our conversation, and I listened back to the interview that I did on the first book. And I said, you know, the great thing about deciding that it's going to be a trilogy is you have some job security. And you laughed, and then, you know, here you are, and you finished it up. So now what?
I'm going to take a big rest after I'm done touring for 5 months. Yeah, I'm going to run around and meet readers and thank them for taking these characters into their hearts. And then I'm going to go back into the classroom and teach my courses and in the spring semester and have a think about what I want to do now that I'm all grown up, I guess.
Were you ready for the response of putting this out into the world and having the response, getting the response that these books received?
I was stunned. The response from readers has been so incredible. They truly have made these characters part of their families. And I had one older lady who said to me, you know, I'm 85 and I'm not dying until I find out what happens to my friends. And I thought, it's extraordinary to have written something up out of your imagination and have people take to it that way, where they're so real to them. So, I mean, what a privilege as a writer to have done such a thing.
Now, for people who have not read the series, and I will say this, and then I will let you explain it, but what it was exciting for me to read in this book is we're back in the present. So tell us a little bit about the story and how you set it up of going back and forth.
Right. So from the very beginning, I wanted to tell a story that went from the present, where we met a reluctant witch named Diana Bishop, who is also a historian and the last in a long line of witches going all the way back to Salem here in Massachusetts. The second main character was Matthew Claremont, a 1,500-year-old geneticist who just also happens to be a vampire. And the third main character in the book was a missing alchemical manuscript from Oxford's Bodleian Library called Ashmole 782. And the trilogy really follows the relationship between these three characters. And I know it might sound strange for a book to be a character, but it really is in this
right.
story. And I always knew that I wanted to go the story to be told in the present, the past, and the present. And in partly that's because, as a historian, I really believe that the past is meaningful and relevant to the present and the future in all kinds of ways. And I wanted to sort of demonstrate that in the story, that there were certain things about the Book of Life, this mysterious manuscript, and Matthew and Diana, that they could only learn in the past. They had to be in the past to experience it. So I love that middle part. A lot of people, you know, so why do they have to go to the past? I love the present. And it's because there were things they could only learn there that they needed then to take back into the present. And that is where we find ourselves in the Book of Life, back in the present, back with all of their extended friends and family, you know, trying to, you know, really put the pieces of what they've learned back together again.
You know, there's a moment in the book where Matthew suggests that there are really few scientific questions, and those questions we've been posing forever: who am I, and why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you rattle with.
That's absolutely true, and you can find those questions back in the earliest works written by Greek philosophers, all the way to listening to Stephen Hawking. You know, that's still what we're trying to figure out. How does this world work? Why am I here? What is my place in it? How can I understand it? And if I can understand it, you know, are there things that I can do to manipulate it or harness its power? And that impulse is consistent across, you know, time and space and great geographic distance. And I think we can sometimes forget that because we feel we've come so far from these earlier thinkers when really all we've done is answer the question a different way.
Do you look to, given your background of being a professor of history and science, do you incorporate that into your book? And I guess if you do, is it conscious or is it just because it's what you know?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, it is what I know, and they're always telling writers to write what you know.
Sure.
But there's also, you know, I do have a lot of, you know, classroom situations where students understandably are can be a little bit dismissive of things like alchemy that they think is kind of silly. You know, how could you change lead into gold? What, that's ridiculous. And then the deeper they get into the philosophy and the rationale behind it, and the more they start saying, well, actually, you know, this would have made sense to the people at the time. So one of the things that I really work on in my classroom and is a real theme in my book is that, you know, understanding and empathy is always a better way to go than judgment and dismissal, whether it's because someone's a different religion or someone's a different race or someone has a different set of scientific beliefs. That, you know, we should always try to understand before we judge. And I think that's a pretty good message, and even in this day and age.
Do you think, I'm going to ask you about a broad generalization, but let's try it, which is, do you think, given your background and given of an interest in science and of history, but science specifically, that there is a natural inclination to have that idea of what if, to think about what if, and bring in the fantasy and the science fiction element to it?
Oh, yeah, I think that's a very human response. We all want to believe, actually, that our science is great and we can rely on it, but there's that little bit just beyond the boundaries of science that we never want to part with entirely. You know, as Diana learns, you know, really the magic has never really gone that far away. And I think we do see that in the popular fascination with these creatures, you know, long past a time where our science supports a belief that these might actually exist and, you know, be our next door neighbors. And it's precisely that kind of divide that I like to play with in these books.
So with the witches and the vampires, there's still, when you get down to the basics, this is a story very much about family.
Very much about family. And about families in the traditional sense, which means a group of people who I love and respect and who I have a sense of responsibility towards. You know, the idea of the traditional family being a mom and dad and two children is actually not very traditional or old at all.
Right.
And that all through history, families have been blended and cobbled together from all kinds of people that, you know, gathered together to take care of each other. And that was certainly the sense of family that was instilled in me by my parents, and that I think we can sometimes forget that that's really the true meaning of family.
You're coming back to your alma mater, the Mount Holyoke, tomorrow night for an event at Odyssey Bookshop. We just had Emily on from Odyssey, and they're very excited. What is that like for you to come back? Is that fun?
Oh, I think it's the best ever. You know, I mean, being back in South Hadley at an event sponsored by the Odyssey, which is one of the most important bookstores in my life, because
yes,
it was such an integral part of my academic experience as an undergraduate. It really feels like coming home, and in this kind of amazing way, you know, and all these people show up, and my college classmates will be there, and some of my faculty will be there, and so, I mean, talk about an extraordinary experience. And of course, it's such a wonderful bookstore, and it's such a beautiful campus, and I know I'm biased, but
well, it is.
You know, it
yeah.
is. It just, it absolutely is. So the South Hadley event is always a highlight of my tour for me, and it's always a really special night because it does, again, have that kind of family feeling to it. So anybody who's has nothing to do tomorrow night, come on down to South Hadley and join the family.
It must be fun for you to come back as, I mean, we always talk about this in a reunion sense, but you come back and, you know, you got a pretty good story to tell, literally and figuratively.
And also a story that really, you know, a liberal arts college, you know, really stands for this kind of story. You know,
right.
I think we have so much of an urge to professionalization and to, you know, everybody should know what they want to be and start embarking on it. And what great liberal arts colleges like Mount Holyoke stand for is, you know, the beauty of the process and exploring the options. I was not a writing major. I was not a journalism major. I was a Renaissance studies major. And, you know, talk about a degree without a career path associated with it, you know, and I've turned out really okay. So it's also just a great thing to celebrate that sense of open-ended possibility that I think Mount Holyoke and other colleges like it really, you know, exist for.
Well, Deborah Harkness will be at Mount Holyoke College for an event sponsored by the Odyssey Bookshop tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And again, you can find out more information by going to odysseybks.com. Odysseybks.com for more information. The new novel is out today. It is a delight. It is so much fun. The Book of Life. It's published by Viking. Deborah Harkness, always wonderful to have you on the program. Congratulations on finishing the third book, and we can't wait to have you for the next time around when something new and exciting comes into your life.
I look forward to it, Joe. We've come full circle.
Absolutely.
The Discovery of Witches. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.